About 10 years ago, it finally dawned on me that I live in kind of a pop culture bubble. Of course, touring forces you to live in somewhat of a vacuum, far away from your surroundings where basic amenities start from zero on a daily basis. And beyond that, and aside from current world events, I live in my own world. It's a world that has heard of the Kardashian family, but has no idea why they're famous, or why words like YOLO, twerking, or honey boo boo, while holding the attention of the general populace, fail to hold mine. In my world, Sweet Leaf is the national anthem, Iggy Pop is king, and the only church I genuflect to is the Church of Misery. When I meet someone who hasn't heard of Uncle Acid and the Deadbeats, I look at them like one looks at someone who hasn't seen Star Wars. It's only now that I realize that I'm the crazy person, or as I'd like to think, the only sane person surrounded by idiots. I have my own star system I adhere to. It's not meant to be deliberately unusual. It's just where the chips fell. I'm not intentionally trying to be offbeat. There are many things that everyone likes that I like too. Pizza, for instance. It's delicious. Most people would agree. But when it comes to music, I seem to naturally deviate. This past summer, we toured America as part of the Traveling Uproar Festival. There were many great bands on the roster. Alice in Chains headlined, Jane's Addiction played, Coheed and Cambria, Duff McKagan's Walking Papers. And while everyone was fawning over the expected personalities, Jerry Cantrell, Perry Farrell, Dave Navarro, our camp was quietly in the corner, giddy as schoolboys, because Pete Stahl was on the tour as well. Pete Stahl is the singer of DC punk legends Scream. He also sang in Wool. He also sang in Goatsnake and Earthlings. And to me, most importantly, on our 2008 album, Never Too Loud, on the track Forest for the Trees. And that track also featured Vista Chino Calle singer John Garcia. We hadn't seen Pete since that day at 606 Studios when he laid down vocals on our album, and it was most pleasant to finally meet up with him after all these years. Don't know how many people actually know, but Pete moonlights as tour manager for several notable bands. On the Uproar Festival, he was tour managing Coheed and Cambria. As far as we were concerned, and even though it didn't say it on the marquee and he wasn't playing, he was the main stage headliner in our eyes. So, knowing that we'd be spending over a month together on tour, naturally I asked him to be on the podcast, to which he graciously agreed. Again, as with all the episodes, I do little, if any, preparation. These are informal discussions with people I'm friends with and or admire. In this case, I used the podcast as an excuse to extract an hour of Pete's time so I could hang with the man. Selfish, I know, but it's what keeps me doing this. Moments like this entire episode. A big thank you to Blue Mic Microphones, Skull Candy Headphones, and to everyone who's left a comment on iTunes or SoundCloud. Please keep those comments coming. It's great. It's good for the podcast. I love to read them. Thank you very much. So, without further ado, Pete Stahl is this episode's guest on the official Danko Jones podcast, and it starts now. Thanks for being here, Pete. This has been very anticipated. when we took the tour and we saw Coheed on the list, and then we got the itinerary for the tour and your name was on there. There was emails exchanged amongst us that you were here. So, you know, I was like, it took me like 3 days to finally see you. It's hard the way they've got it all set up.
Yeah,
but
it's like you're saying, two worlds.
Yeah, when you came over on our bus, it's like a little village. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I kind of sprung myself on you the first time on this tour, but I was like, we kind of staked you out.
So no, I was stoked to see you guys were on the bill, that's for sure.
Yeah, and it was great that you were on the bill. Now, Like, you're tour managing Coheed on this.
Yeah, I've been tour managing them for a number of years now, actually. And it's kind of what I do to make a living these days, working for other bands. And you know, I've been fortunate who I work for. And Coheed's one of those bands where they're easy, you know, good dudes. And so it's really...
It's when you came down to 606, you were in the middle of kind of figuring out some Sparta stuff too.
So yeah, I worked with that band. At that time, I may have been still working for their management company, but yeah, I've worked with Sparta as a production manager.
Is it the same company as with Coheed?
It was at that time.
Okay.
And actually, but now Sparta kind of manages themselves. But I, you know, I'll still hear from Jim or Tony or those guys. They'll hit me up with a question, and you know, I'm just always down for helping them out. You know, and we share a crew sometimes.
It's a bit of a close knit. I can make the degrees. I can connect the dots with you guys because we were at 606 with Nick Raskolnikov, who had just finished producing a Coheed record, and then you came in, and he brought you in because of the Goatsnake connection, mm-hmm. and we were at 606 because of the obvious connection. Mm-hmm. So there's all this. Am I connecting the dots incorrectly, or is it just coincidence?
I mean, you know as well as I do how small the musician community is, and mm-hmm. Wherever you step into it, you're probably going to run into somebody that's related to you in some way.
Yeah.
And, you know, Nick Raskolnikov, I met, just kind of random, though. He's from Knoxville, Tennessee, which is a town that Scream used to go down and play a lot. It's only about 7 or 8 hour drive. It's a good college town. There's some good bars there. There were some cool old punk bands from there.
And yeah, it had a good scene.
Yeah,
I remember
Knoxville, and ended up playing with Greg Rogers, a drummer from The Obsessed, and also Goatsnake. He's from Knoxville, and Nick knew who he was, but you know, it's always about generations. Greg was a little bit older, and then Greg also was in a band. You see, like everything's tied together. Like,
yeah.
Before I knew Greg was in a band, he ended up somehow being in a band from Texas called Poison 13. I don't know if you remember that band.
No, but is
and Chris Gates was in Poison 13, I believe, who was in also, he was in the Big Boys, who was a band that, from Austin, that, like, when we came through town, they put us up, and that was, you know, there was, that was in, like, early 80s. But everything's connected, or just like, even, like, the first day I was on this tour, you know, we were in Scranton, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And, our dressing room is right next to Walking Papers, and Duff McKagan was right there. And I've never really talked to him before, but he's from Seattle. That band's from Seattle. And bass player Wool, Al Block, and him were friends. And they like he'd recorded. He had another band. Duff McKagan had a band before this called Loaded, I think.
Yeah, he still does.
Okay, that band was cool. And actually, the bass player from Goatsnake played in that band, which I didn't even bring up to him. Stuart Dahlquist played with him for a bit. But, anyway, so I saw him looking at my production case, and he's such a super nice guy. And I just said, hey, my name's Pete Stahl. I'm friends with Al Block. He's like, oh, wow. And then we started talking, and then I was like, yeah, I know. He said something like, Al Block, he's like old school Seattle punker. He's like, he said, like, yeah, we used to have such a best scene in Seattle, like early 80s. I'm like, no, I remember, man. I played in a band called Scream. He's like, you were in Scream? Dude, I opened up for your band in Metropolis. I was in 10-minute warning. I'm like, no fucking way. It's like, yeah. So that's how it is. It's like, there's Duff McKagan from Guns N' Roses.
Yeah.
So, and it's just, everything is fucking connected.
Yeah,
he knows Al Block. You know, his band opened up for us. I remember that show like it was yesterday, practically. It was such a important show for us, and he's right. Seattle was a lot of people don't know that. Before, like early 80s, it had a really happening all ages punk rock scene that, you know, there was, and then when the all ages scene got shut down by the city, it kind of went way underground, kind of fell apart, and then kind of, you know, was obviously revitalized
right.
with a massive scene that happened later on with you know, Nirvana and Pearl Jam and.
Right,
Alice in Chains.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we also have a past connection. I mentioned it to you at 606. I don't know if you remember, but my old band, Horseshack, we opened up for Wool at Sneaky D's in Toronto.
Okay.
With you, and I think you're on tour. What was on tour with Guzzard?
That's right, from Minneapolis.
So it was Guzzard and Wool. I have the show poster somewhere, and I think it turned out to be our last show as a band.
Oh, man.
We were booked for to open up for The Unsane, and then we broke up before that could happen. But we opened up for you guys.
What was that band like?
Horseshack was like...
I remember the name.
Jesus Lizard.
Were you playing bass?
Yes. Uh-huh. I was singing and playing bass. Jesus Lizard, Unsane. That's why they booked us. They asked us to open. But yeah,
right.
That kind of touch and go vibe.
Cool.
In the mid '90s, and I think I remember the booker at that club, Lou, and when I saw that you guys were coming, I asked if I could open up for you, because I think you were touring on Box Set.
That would have been
Budspawn. It might have been Budspawn.
Budspawn was the first one. Who was drumming? You remember?
Moffitt
or Chris Bratton?
I cannot remember.
Really, that band was.
I just remember you were wearing a long sleeved white shirt.
Well,
that's my memory of that.
I didn't have a wardrobe case, but I definitely tried to be stylish at that time.
Yeah, I don't even know if I went up to you. I was probably too intimidated.
Oh, man.
But so
we used to love, I always loved playing in Toronto, just like Knoxville, 9 hours away from DC.
Right, yeah.
Whatever. We used to go up there and play a lot with Scream and Wool. That's for sure.
And when
in
we
fact,
started,
Toronto, we played the Opera House, opening up for we did one tour, a national tour with, it was us, Rage Against the Machine, and House of Pain. It was a crazy tour, man.
Oh, I remember that.
House.
Yeah,
that was a fucking awesome show. I love playing at that venue. I think that's the only time I ever got a chance to play there, though. I think I did a gig there later on, you know, working with the Foo Fighters. But Toronto, man, had some crazy shows there, you know. I remember Scream played the Anarchist Festival there with MDC.
Wow.
We used to play Lee's Palace a lot in the Rivoli.
Yeah.
We played
both Rivoli. Places are still running with shows all the time.
I'll tell you a crazy story about the Rivoli. And I have footage of it at home somewhere. I have it on a VHS because I shot it. But we were playing there at night. And so they told us we had to come in early in the day to do a sound check because Iggy Pop was doing a showcase that night at the Riv. And he was just playing by himself, acoustic guitar. And it was on the Brick by Brick tour.
Wow.
And so we went there like 10 o'clock in the morning, did our sound check. And then they made us leave the club. So we're just sitting in the van behind the club, and then all of a sudden the limo pulls up, and he gets out and he goes in there, and then they start setting up for the show. And then, like, I guess, I don't know, 40 minutes later, this guy comes out and says, "Is, you know, anyone in here play drums or, you know, bass?" And Dave and Skeet were in there, so they're like, "Yeah, so they go in there and they start jamming with him. And they start running through "I Want to Be Your Dog" in 1969 and all these songs.
Wow.
And then they're like, "Well, he asked them if they want to do this show with him." And they say, "Fuck yeah." So, "But you got to let the rest of our band in," because they wouldn't let us in. He's like, "So, yeah, of course." So that me and Franz go in there. And you remember that dressing room back there?
Yeah.
It's totally really fucking tiny.
Yeah.
And Iggy Pop was just hanging out in there the whole time with us. And he was just like, "I hate this shit, you know." Doing these kind of things, because people, they were serving sushi out there, and it was just, you know, they put all the posters everywhere.
Oh, like record company.
And it was all like invite
thing.
Only. Yeah,
right,
that's what it was. And then they all came in there, and then
sounds like Toronto.
They wouldn't let any pictures, but they ran through that set of all those great songs, and I just Dave Grohl on drums, Skeeter Thompson on bass, Iggy Pop on guitar and singing, and I got it on film.
Wow.
Some of it. I got a couple of songs on film, and so that was like, that's one.
Have you heard
story.
From Dave about that? Like, has Dave ever, obviously?
At the time it was like, I think later on it may have made it on the news in Toronto, like somehow, like when Nirvana came through there,
right.
He interviewed, and he may have told that story, but I think for some reason I recall that.
I've never even heard of I never even heard that. That should be like stuff of like city legend.
It should be, because it definitely happened. But maybe because it was like an invite only thing, that nobody, a lot of people didn't know about it. But it definitely happened.
Right.
It was a highlight for us, and just to be there and meet Iggy Pop, and then those guys got to play with him. I should put that up on YouTube someday. I gotta dig it up. But Toronto, man, yeah, it's like, I had such a great scene, bunch of fucking goofs and
still around. Someone did a book on them, like a hard copy coffee table book on their whole history.
And Jill Heath.
Oh, I know Jill. Yep. She's great. Yeah. She's so great. She's so cool. Yeah, I think didn't Scream put her in a thank you album?
Definitely.
Yeah.
She helped us out a lot.
I remember that.
And
I'm like, wow, all the bands thank Jill. Jill's so down with everyone.
And then actually recently, one thing you probably don't know, a lot of people don't know, though, that label Dine Alone out of Toronto.
Yes, Joel.
Yeah, they just put out a couple Wool records.
What?
Yep. Vinyl only. And I didn't even get a copy, because I think the copies went to my brother's house. I still haven't gotten a copy, but it's like two records of unreleased stuff that we did as demos for a record that we just kind of fell apart before never came about. But it's like 17 songs on two records, killer stuff. A lot of songs I wrote, because Franz was kind of, wasn't coming up with as much material as normal, and me, it was just me and the drummer working it out. But we recorded the stuff, and Joel put it out. And the packaging's beautiful. I have seen that.
Well, like, we're friends on Facebook. I'm calling him out on this podcast.
Yeah, there you
this
go.
This is crazy. You got to get... Well, what am I saying? You were on our album, and I got it right here. It's like, it's only like 5 years late. But
has it already been 5 years?
Yeah, man. This
because you have another record that came out recently, and that or how many records have you put out since then?
Two records since.
Okay, well that's good. And glad you're productive.
Yeah, this came out in 2008, and
I can't believe it was that long. And now that's too bad. You have to go back there and record on the Sound City console.
That's right, because that was Sound City was still happening when we were
that
there.
Console, though, I know you worked with. Well, Lou was probably...
Lou was there. Lou engineered it, and it was Nick, and...
So Lou's kind of taken over, like...
Right.
You know, kind of filled Nick's shoes.
Because Nick's back in Tennessee.
Yeah. Yeah, he moved back down.
Although I know he's done other projects with other bands in other cities.
Alice in Chains. I mean, he did...
Oh, he did? He did the new album?
He did the last two records, dude.
Man, I'm so out of it. I didn't
know. You believe that?
Wow, that's...
So I met Nick Raskolnik. He was working at Sound City, putting tape on machines for $10 an hour. I swear to God. And now he's like one of the most sought-after producers in the world.
Yeah.
You know, he's...
Funny as hell, too.
He's done Rush's last two records, right?
That I know. Toronto. I mean, I know that.
I mean, that's... For sure. You know.
And we did that album on one of Neil Peart's kits.
Oh, really?
Because Neil Peart let him use it. Yeah, he gave it to
him. So, Nick... I mean, it's just amazing. And so now Nick showed him the ropes, and he's almost like a little Nick, you know, but I mean, a grown man, of course, but he did our last record, Scream. We did a record already 2 years ago. We put it out on Side One Dummy. It's part of this Complete Control Sessions thing, which is like kind of like the whole concept is to record the band live in the studio, which is good because that way you can do it cheap. And we didn't, and because of the, you know, I hardly have any time for music, unfortunately, and everyone's spread apart. You know, we had to come in there and record the record in a couple of days when those guys were out on the West Coast and we were playing shows. But Lou did that record, and...
That record, we heard one... Well, I didn't hear it, but Matthias, our tour manager, he pointed it out the other night. We were watching Ted.
There's a song in Ted.
And Screams on the...
Yeah,
the
free.
Yeah, he was like, wait a minute. And he went into his pod and he matched it up.
Yeah.
He recognized it. So he's like, you got to ask Pete that. You got to ask Pete about that.
Yeah.
And that's pretty cool.
That was neat.
It's the new thing now, man. Well, I mean, it wasn't a movie. It was our album, but we got you on board through Nick Raskolnik.
Right.
And on Forest for the Trees.
Cool. And singing with Johnny is
Yeah, and didn't Wool do a split with Caius back in the day?
We did. We did. But yeah, we did a split with Caius on Bongload Records, I think, and it's a good record.
Yeah, because when you we had John, because John was on our album previously, so it was easy to call him up and he would come down.
I was flattered you guys asked me to be on that. On your record, but Johnny's a rock dude, man.
Yeah.
Really like classic rock singer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So for me, it's like, I think his voice really fits your music.
His favorite singer is Ian Asbury.
There you go.
And I could see the influence.
Who also has recorded at the Rancho a bunch, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because in fact, Chris Goss did the last Cult record.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah.
Ian
has done a bunch of stuff with Chris.
That's a great matchup.
So look through his catalog recently. And yeah, he's been out to the Rancho. He's recorded there. And there's another guy, Ed Monsef, that's a great engineer that just got, he just moved out of, he was in North Hollywood and had a studio there. I know they tracked a bunch of the last Cult record there with Chris, yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, because we had John on board for that track, and like I said, well, I guess I could go back and forth with John, but it would be cool if we can get like a third voice on there. And Nick would lob over these names at me, and I'd be like, oh, yeah, that's cool, I guess. And then he threw your name out, and I was like, what? I was just like, what? You could, what? And then, you know, Nick was obviously, after he saw my reaction, he was playing it off cool. He was like, yeah, man, I'm going to work with him before. I'm gonna give him a call for sure. And so when you came down, it was like, it was a big deal. I was just trying to play it super cool. Hey, man.
Yeah, I'm just as nervous as anybody else coming into a situation
because we didn't know each other, and you didn't even know what you were walking into.
Not really.
It could have been like a pop radio song or something, but I was pretty confident that that particular part, that song would I could hear your voice, we could all hear it. But what you didn't see, because you had your back to us, it was me and Nick, and we were just every time, every take you were doing, we were just looking at each other going, we're doing all this. It was awesome. And then Nick would just like go back to you and go, oh, that was cool. You want to try it again? And then you do it again and we'd be like, because you had your back to us. You didn't see. And then when it was all said and done, and we heard the track with the two voices, and then I would come in there. I was like, fuck, this is a reunion. This is like that 10-inch reunion again. This is fucking that rah. so that remains one of my favorite songs in our catalog, just from being a fanboy. The fact that I was able to like get the both of you on a track of ours, and then I come in off the side and just like, you know, like sing it. It was so fucking great.
Awesome. And well, thank you very much.
Yeah, it was super cool.
Just give me a copy of the record.
I know. I hope you like it.
I have heard it.
Come oh, you on. Have heard
yes,
it.
Yes,
okay,
I have.
Okay. Is it like off YouTube or something?
No, I don't know where I heard it.
Maybe from Nick or
maybe Nick
Lou or
yeah,
yeah. Because I think I emailed you afterwards, but you know things get lost. And then we played the Viper Room, and I spoke to someone on staff there.
Yeah, I worked there occasionally, but not anymore.
Yeah, because I think that night after you're getting in your car and you're like, yeah, come on down tomorrow, I'm working the Viper Room. And then I think I went back into the studio. I'm like, Pete Stahl just invited me to the Viper Room, guys. I'm like, we got to stay here. We got to do. Oh, okay, all right. Yeah, you're right. And they were asking if I was going to even bring it up to you because I feel like a goof. But
what?
I have a jean jacket. We were at Hellfest this year.
Uh-huh.
You know how they have the metal market and they have all the CDs and the t-shirts and all that stuff.
Great festival.
Well, I didn't know, I hadn't gotten the Uproar tour itinerary, but we got a, I got to go, me and Matthias, we both got Goatsnake patches, and I got it sewn on my jean jacket.
No shit.
I've got the jean jacket here. So I didn't get it sewn on because I knew you were on the tour. It happened after, I found it afterwards. But yeah, I'm walking around with a goat snake patch when we were on the East Coast, when it was a little colder and rainy.
Right, right. But, cool. And not to interrupt you, but there's another, that connection, which I just want to bring out real quick, since we're on Uproar, is the singer in Alice in Chains was in Blast for a minute.
Yes.
Which is another band we both know about.
And, yeah.
You know, Santa Cruz, great punk band. And our guitar player, the guitar player in Goatsnake, has a great fucking label called Southern Lord, which everyone should check out.
Yeah.
And he just reissued the Blast stuff, and he went to 606.
Didn't know that.
And they, it just came out last week. I seen Will tweet about it, because Will's on this record. They remastered it or remixed it. I haven't heard it yet, but you know, the singer from Alice in Chains is on that record. He's an old school punker. But yeah, so it's all connected.
And you did something with Sun O recently?
No, that's just that's something that just got re-released. I sang on a Sun O record years ago, and then some British guy that I'm not familiar with, but I guess he's, you know, really well-known noise like kind of producer or artist, just remixed it and did a complete different remix of the original Sun O stuff. Originally, you'd listen to the Sun O stuff and now I'd just be like way in the background. Right. You wouldn't even barely hear me. This guy did the complete opposite, where the vocals way out front. It's kind of cool treatment that he did of it.
I haven't heard it. It's pretty neat. Lyrics? Are there lyrics? Or are you just screaming?
No, there's lyrics.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, check it out. It's cool. But yeah, Sun O is... you know, Goatsnake and Sun O are kind of some of the same guys. And
yeah. Is Goatsnake doing anything anymore?
We keep talking about it. Yeah, we played, last time we played, I guess would have been Hellfest or in Europe a couple years ago. And
I would suggest you do, only because of the amount of Goatsnake merch I see people wearing.
Yeah, yeah, I guess.
Myself excluded.
I would like to. Believe me, and our guitar player is so busy with Sun O, is really... does a lot of touring, and he keeps popping out kids and with his wife. And so, you know, family gets in the way of that.
Yeah.
And our drummer has his children. And so, man, if it was up to me, you know, I'd rather be playing shows than out here tour managing, believe me. So if we had an opportunity to go to Europe and do a tour, hopefully next summer, you know, hopefully, but really I would prefer to record something new before we go play, but I think we probably will at some point.
That's awesome news. I mean, I think there's a hell of a lot of people who would love to hear new Goatsnake, myself included.
Thank you.
Take myself and Matthias out of the picture. I think there's just so... I'm just like, are the guys getting a cut of this amount of merch I keep seeing? Like, everybody's wearing Goatsnake shirts and... I don't know.
Well,
I just
if they buying it through Southern Lord, yes, but you never know about that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Greg's pretty good about it, but I'm sure there's... I have noticed that Goatsnake is, you know...
I'll bet you $5 that the patch I got...
We didn't get Goatsnake patches, so...
Yeah.
I'll have to... Thanks for letting me know about that.
Well, that's good that you don't have any Goatsnake patches, because if you did, then I'd be a filthy bootlegging supporter. And also, I know I thanked you 5 years ago, but I want to do it on the record. Thank you for singing on our album, man.
Anytime, man. If you come up with another part, man, just give me a holler, especially if you're in the area.
This is on the record, man. I got you. But thank you, man. Thanks,
sure,
Pete.
You should come out to the Rancho. That's what I tell everybody.
I know.
I'm that guy that ever since I was a kid, I always wanted to turn my friends on to cool music and what I was listening to. And then the same when I landed in L.A., crash landed in Los Angeles, and I was fortunate enough to somehow fall into meeting, you know, the people from that studio and people that live out there, and started collaborating with and touring with Caius and all those guys. And but that studio is just a really special place for me, and I know I always like you as a singer and a writer, you know, if you went out there, you'd, and Johnny probably tell you the same thing.
Yes.
So like, so we always want to drag.
Brent's
always trying to drag
everything.
People out there. Yeah. Are you crazy? I'm not going out to the drive 2.5 hours to go out to the desert.
Yeah. I think Barrett told me that.
Once you get Brent. Barrett to say, yeah. Yeah. Do you guys have problems coming into the States and playing?
No, because we go through the proper channels and we pay.
What's I'm sure you must be aware of that recent new law in Canada.
Yeah, it's bullshit.
I guess it took effect the end of July, which of course it does. It's always kind of been bullshit. I don't know why. It's just what it is they just raised the price, but it's always been bullshit that the big tours don't have to pay those fees, and it's always like non-exempt venues. But you know, Scream always had to get the promoters to like put up the money for the work permit, and then he'd spread it across several promoters across the country, and all the promoters would pitch in like $200 or whatever from their show cost to pay for the work permit. I'd pay for it at the border, then I'd get reimbursed, and then you know that's what you had to do. But then anybody with over 12 people, I think it originally was, I don't remember, but anyone in a tour bus didn't have to pay these little fees, even though they're the ones that can afford it.
It's aimed at mid-level to grassroots bands who don't have enough money, and it's made, these laws and regulations are made by people who have no idea how it is to be in a band and make music. It's sad. At the end of the day, the grassroots bands who don't have the means to get this, or they're just not at that level yet, but they're amazing, we'll never see them in Canada because they're just not going to bother.
Now, how about your mayor, man? Is he still smoking crack?
Yeah. Oh, you heard? I don't know. Yeah, obviously, the newest one was he was out on some kind of street festival, and
the
someone
tapas?
had a phone, and recorded him going, "I could get some blow. Let's go get some blow." And I don't know how he's able. He's still in office.
Dude, I come from a town where our mayor got busted smoking crack.
Yeah, totally.
And got reelected.
Yeah.
So, and he's still on the city council.
Yeah.
So, he's an icon in our city.
Well, his name gets brought up all the time. So it's our two cities. But I mean, it's just getting to a ridiculous point now. And I've gone on record saying, well, we deserve him. Because we elected him, he hasn't changed his stance. He's still the same guy. Mm-hmm. He didn't pull some trick on us. This is the guy that we all elected. I didn't vote for him, but you know, the majority of us voted for him, and now this is our punishment.
Right.
To be the laughing stock of the continent. So, yeah, DC, we've now taken your crown, man.
I love Toronto.
There's a lot of construction. Yeah, I love Toronto too. I love it. I mean, I like DC, but I love Toronto. We spent a lot of time in DC actually in the early days. We would stay at Ian Savonius's place,
mm-hmm.
and we'd hang out with Ian. And
I missed him. He's been through. He was just in LA. Like, I want to say it was almost like a book tour.
Yes, he put out a book, which I still have to get, on the dude from Girls Against Boys has his book label, his book imprint or whatever.
Who?
And Ian.
Johnny Temple?
Yeah, Johnny Temple. Yeah. I can't remember the name, but he
I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, and Ian's in our book, yeah, which I'm going to give you. But awesome. I think it's because the makeup reunited.
Okay.
Coachella.
They did play Coachella.
He's such a character. I mean, I've never met anyone like him when I met him, and ever since. I've just never met anyone like Ian Savonius. He's like, I remember this one time we were at his house, and I think he was rooming with Michelle May, mm-hmm. and I think Allison Wolf from Bratmobile or mm-hmm. someone was, anyways.
Allison lives in LA now.
Yes, and she's in the book too.
Okay.
Yeah, she's supposed to come out to our LA show like two shows ago, but
we DJ together sometimes.
She's great times. Too. Yeah. And this is in 98, so this isn't recent, but we had a fight in their living room. Our band had a band fight in their living room. And it was the other two guys who were fighting, and I was kind of the mediator. And it was embarrassing because we were doing it in front of people. But he was awesome. He was just like, it was just me and him off to the side. He's like, you guys fighting? And he was like, I think my memory is like he was like half dancing and he was loving it. Cause it, you know, and he's like, oh, we fight all the time, man. So it's all right. It's just, yeah. Meanwhile, I'm like, is my band breaking up? Like, I was just like, what is going on? And we're doing it in public, you know? And he loved it. He was just like loving it. That's what I remember that of Ian. He was like half dancing. He's got this kind of like Prince snake vibe, you know, like, and he was doing that kind of thing. It was awesome. But yeah, I mean, our memories of DC, we played Cold Rice, and Makeup had this album called Live at Cold Rice, which was just their DJ night in their neighborhood club. And we played it. We played the cold, like Live at Cold Rice.
Danko Jones,
okay. Live at Cold Rice. And it was just for us, like we worshiped that record. And then suddenly like, the band who we like really loved is now taking us in, and it was just back in 98 and 99, it was, those were like another life, but it was just like, it was something, it was surreal when I look back on it. But yeah, that was cool. Funny how I bring you on the podcast and we end up just talking about DC.
Hey, there you go.
That's like if you had a podcast and I was guesting on it, and we're talking about Rush. Well, thanks, Pete. Thank you for doing this.
No, thanks for having me.
Changing overnight. I always wondered if you saw what the rest of us could see. Every day's a final trial. Can't see the forest for the trees.